I'm Stephen Price.
Hello, I'm Cara Githens.
This is The Innkeepers, a podcast by Sanctuary Inn. At Sanctuary Inn, we believe we are called to equip, refresh, and restore God's global workers.
On this podcast, we will be interviewing guests who have much to teach us about the many facets of missionary care. Let's learn together and be encouraged to press on in the work God has given each one of us to do.
Hi, this is Steve.
Hello, this is Cara. So Steve, can you share with our audience today who we are interviewing?
Yeah, we're interviewing some guests and some friends of mine, and they've just asked us to refer to them as Clint and Valerie. So Clint and Valerie and their family have pursued God's call in their lives to serve and work amongst cultures who have little to no access to the gospel around the world. They've done this through starting a business in a limited access nation, and currently they serve in a more traditional role of missions among the diaspora in North America. Their heart and hope is that everyone would have an opportunity to understand the possibility of reconciliation with God through Jesus. They have four children who keep them super busy. They currently live in Toronto, ministering to others who are from this diaspora. They have a heart for seeing more people mobilized into the Great Commandment and the Great Commission.
Great, let's get started.
Well, we have the opportunity today on the Innkeepers podcast to interview some friends of mine, Clint and Valerie, that my wife and I first met the summer of 2009 when they came out to Portland, Oregon. And so, Clint and Valerie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here with you.
Would you just take a minute and introduce yourselves to our listeners and give us a little bit of your backstory?
Sure. My name's Clint, and this is Valerie, my wife. We are American. We've been married for, how long have we been married? 16 years. And we have four kids, and we've served God around the world in different places. We have a heart for God and what he's doing in the earth. We did, as Steve, you mentioned, we did spend a summer at the Worldview Training Center in Portland, Oregon, and we loved it. It was incredible, and it was really good to connect with you and so many others. And what would you add about us, honey?
That's it.
Well, you might mention that you do have a set of twins in those four.
We do. Our oldest is 13 or 14 almost next week. Yeah. And then our twins are 9, and then our youngest is 7.5. She'll be 8 the end of the summer.
All right.
So I haven't gotten a chance to get to know your story much yet. So could you share with us a little bit about how you guys got involved in cross-cultural ministry?
For me, it wasn't until I went to school at Liberty University. And so it was my first year there. I transferred in as a junior, and no one had ever told me that billions of people had never heard the gospel. And so it was there, that was the first time I ever heard that fact. And so it really, God used that picture and that idea to mess with my head and heart. And I had been a Christian since I was 12 or 13. And like, I've never doubted God or his existence or what he was doing in the world. He radically saved my family. And so when I heard that, I'm like, wow, like God loves everyone the same, and everyone should have the same opportunity to know who he is and what he's done for them through his son. And this is not right. And so through a series of circumstances and relationships with different people and mentors, God led me into missions to do work pursuing those who are unreached.
Yeah, we both kind of had our own journeys before getting to know each other. When I was a young child, I remember meeting missionaries. I was probably 8 years old, meeting missionaries who came to our church and was telling us how they would tell people about Jesus in Brazil. And I remember as a little kid thinking, oh, how cool. And in my head, my picture was this big circus tent, and you sat underneath and you would tell people about Jesus all day. And then they would bring you green bean casserole to eat at night because you have to eat something you don't like. And that was right. The worst thing. But the Lord was churning in my heart about the world and how people need to hear about Jesus. And so as I got older, I was involved with different opportunities to go overseas. And I went to India twice in high school for the summers. And then I, middle of university, I went for a year to teach in a Bible college and help with an orphanage. And so we both kind of were running this path that we knew the Lord was directing us towards going overseas. And then after we got, when we got married, we knew that we were headed to India. We knew the Lord had kind of narrowed both of our hearts down to one area. And so we got married and started looking for an organization and started raising support and just started our journey together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and you went to India on, now we have another podcast recording that will air this season that will talk about the business's mission model, but you guys went to India with a business's mission model. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. We were kind of a hybrid model. And so the idea was we would be on support. We would be fully supportive missionaries. We would start and run the business, and God willing, as the business would grow, we would phase off of support until the business was able to fully sustain us. And so we were well on the way towards reaching that goal. But then things changed. We can save that for later if you want. But yeah, so we definitely were pursuing the whole B4T BAM movement idea of extending the kingdom through gospel witness through business.
Okay. And what ages were your kids when you went to India?
Our oldest had just turned 2.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Raising a family cross-culturally has all its different challenges too.
It does. And it was really unique to see things through her eyes as well. It opened up a lot of relationships too, and kind of views of things.
Yeah.
So, navigating school, even like, I mean, even how we dealt with the community and how we looked at schooling and yeah.
So how would you describe your ministry and missional living that you lived out and the work you guys did?
So for us, business is basically relationships. So when you think about, you know, you're providing a service or producing a product, you're having to engage with all different kinds of people to make this happen, to develop an end result. And so our philosophy of ministry was, well, you know, in a place that has an anti-conversion law, you can't necessarily be a traditional worker in that sense. And so let's start a business. So I on my Rolodex on my phone, as an example, I have about 3,000 names that over the period of about 5 years, like you're building relationships with all these people. So we're, as an example, hotel owners, restaurant owners, transportation company owners, different sites that we would take our clients to on our tours, master artisans who were Hindu and Muslim all over the place. And so you're constantly building relationships to support an architecture and infrastructure to serve your customers. And so for us, business was a way to meet people, to develop trust, to gain access into places, and then be intentional in and through those relationships to bring the gospel of Jesus to them. So
it also helped to tear down barriers that our neighbors might have had. You know, if, in going over there, a lot of their first questions are, who are you and why are you here?
Why are you here? Yeah.
Yeah. And so it just gave them an answer to those questions that they could understand. And then they were able to open up and freely have a relationship with us and not be burdened by trying to figure us out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Talk a little bit more about some of your time as a family, the adjustments you made, reference to school, but as a family, how would you describe your time there?
As a family, our time was wonderful. We really enjoyed it. Our daughter adjusted so well. In fact, she would tell people she was Indian. She really thought she was. So we got to know some neighbors that really clued us in on what was coming next. They told us about different schools and told us what to look for. And so we got to meet people. We got to introduce ourselves and kind of see how things were set up. And then through that, our daughter started school. A lot of the children there start at age 3. So she started school at age 3 at a Montessori school and really got to know we got to know the system early.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
So one of my thoughts when we were talking about this interview was just the idea of missional living or incarnational living. And I feel like as a family, you've made a pretty deliberate choice that wherever God has put you, that your desire is to represent the kingdom and represent him. You ended up having to leave India, and then you made another, in terms of the location where you are now, you made a pretty deliberate choice. Can you just talk about kind of that transition, how that went, what were some of your considerations, and how you chose to be where you are now?
We had an unexpected and involuntary transition out of India that was fueled by political turbulence between America and India. And there were some other things happening that we can only speculate, but we unfortunately, we had visa issues for our youngest, which was an indirect way of asking us to leave. And it happened to a whole bunch of other people at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, God, we have this heart, we've acquired these cultural and language skills with a certain group of people. The truth is, like, these people, most of them have never heard the gospel. They don't have a relationship with a Christian. And the unique thing is they're found all around the world. They say that the sun never sets on the Indian diaspora. Huh. And so anywhere in the world you go, you can find people from India. And so we had kind of like an evolution of questions that we were asking. So the first question when we went to India was, God, what can we do to be a part of reaching India? Well, when we had to leave India, the question shifted to, God, what can we do to be a part of reaching Indians? And so our organization invited us to come to Canada, and we relocated, short story, to Toronto, which has a massive population of South Asian Indians who live here. We're talking hundreds of thousands of people, most of whom are not being engaged with the gospel or by the local church. And so we wanted to move into an area that had a high concentration of South Asian Indians so we could continue ministry. So in our mind, the logic was same people, different location. Same need, different location. And, you know, we went from, you know, 130 degree weather in the summer to like minus 30 in the winter, right?
Right.
So
shocking.
Massive like temperature changes, but the Hindu temples, the same Shiva is the same Shiva in Toronto as it is in Varanasi, right? Mm-hmm. So we came here on mission purposefully to engage the South Asian diaspora. And so location for us became a secondary matter.
Yeah.
And so it was a painful process to let go of the country that we had loved. And God kind of refined some of our motives and our thinking in that whole process. And so that's the short of it, how we ended up in Toronto.
Yeah.
And I think with us coming here as Americans, you know, Canada looks a lot like the U.S. does, but things run very differently. And so as we're learning the process and procedure of getting a driver's license or doing this or how do we do this, that's a lot of what our Indian neighbors are going through as well and learning how the system works. And so it's been an interesting way to connect with people here who were not born here in Canada.
Right. Okay.
Well, I think one of the things that we've learned is... you know, things can change so quickly. And so the question is, what is the constant, right? What's the one thing that never changes, right? And so for us, the thing that never changes is the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. And so what we've learned is like, God can allow circumstances to change, but that doesn't mean our calling changes in a sense. And so we have to trust his leading and his guiding and close doors, open doors. And the question is, God, what can we do to be a part of reaching or fulfilling the Great Commission and the Great Commandment wherever you place us? And so that's kind of where we've come to.
Okay.
I'm sure that transition and all the visa issues was not an easy time, because there's so much grief, so much confusion that happens when those kind of transitions. And you know, we've had a lot of guests come here to Sanctuary and in those kind of spaces of like, okay, this door closed, now what? Mm-hmm. So it's good to hear your story and kind of in some ways you're a little bit on the other side of that valley and God has answered that question of now what. But the valley is still hard.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we were going through the struggle and the emotions and not really understanding what was going on emotionally with it, but feeling hurting inside, we actually sat down with a missionary counselor, and she put, this was months later, like she put the grief curve down in front of us, and we had never put the word grief to that process. And immediately Clint and I were like, "Ooh, I'm there." And we were at different spots. We knew right where we were at. Mm-hmm. And it gave us permission to grieve, because when you are uprooted and you aren't expecting it, or you aren't wanting it, or any of these things, like it is grief. It's grief over many things. For yourself and for your kids and for life and ministry and everything. So it was a freedom to know that there was the ability to grieve.
Yeah.
Freedom to
grieve. Yeah.
You know how God sometimes uses trials to like humble us. And I didn't realize how arrogant and prideful I was. We were in Thailand once on a visa run, and we were staying at the Juniper Tree, which I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It was a missionary guest house, and they had communal dining. And I remember there was a family there. And the dad, he would always come to each meal like disheveled, unkempt, didn't shave. Like he was just, I'm thinking to myself, like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, what's his deal? And they had been through an unexpected involuntary transition. You know, in my mind, I'm like, hey man, just pull up your bootstraps. What's going on? And so little did I know I would become that guy, like during this massive transition. Like I literally would, like, you know, the number it did on me mentally, emotionally, psychologically, like I would sit down at a computer to type an email, and like, I would tell my fingers to move and like, they wouldn't move. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, just really dark places, like when everything that you had built and worked towards, like, is taken away. And it's like, God, why, you know? And so that was, it took, I had a friend, his name was Tim. And he's like, he said, Clint, it'll be 2 years before you get back to normal. And he had been through something similar in India. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, and he was exactly right. It took 2 years to get back to like a healthy place, for sure. So, sorry.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's totally appropriate.
That's really good. It's good for everyone to hear those things. So we often talk about the fact that change and grief travel together. They're traveling companions. And even good change, I mean, quote unquote, good change can have an element of grief to it, because often you're leaving something behind and going somewhere else. And so we're just trying to, we talk a lot about that with the missionary kids that come here. And we talk about how the change that they're going through, even depending, you know, if it's quote unquote, good change or bad or unexpected, there is an element of grief. You have to recognize that, honor that grief, mourn that. Kara has a story from her own experience about giving, you know, finally being given the permission to grieve, and just how significant that was. So
I used to think that God's call on my life was solely for the benefit of other people. And what I didn't realize was that God's call my life, yes, is partly in the benefit for other people, but it's also to mold and refine me, right?
Right.
And even as a family together, like, and so learning, like you talk about change and grief, and it's like God uses change and grief to like show you who you really are and who you thought you were, but you really aren't. And like to bring out all of the stuff inside of you. And so like change and grief are great agents for sanctification. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
That's true. That's true. What was the timeline, time span, I guess, from leaving India before arriving in Canada? How much time elapsed?
About a year and a half.
About a year
From the time we left the plane going, we went to America to have our youngest.
Okay.
To the point of moving up here. So in that year and a half, we found out we couldn't get the visa we needed for our youngest. Clint had to go and shut down. I had three babies. My twins are 1.5 when our youngest was born. So I couldn't go. So he had to go and shut down our apartment and our business and everything. And then he came back, and we started moving this direction. Our oldest at that time was in school, so we wanted her to be able to start school wherever we were going to end up. We didn't want to do another year. We'd already done 1 year of kind of schooling at home, yeah, off and on while having a baby.
Transitional living.
Yeah. So we wanted her to be set by the fall when school started that next year. So
I think over that year and a half, we moved 14 times.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we've heard that story too.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely. I think it's good for people who support missions and who are interested in caring for missionaries to understand this is a reality of transition. It is an uncomfortable place.
Right.
And God doesn't waste any of it, but it's not like he waved a magic wand and you left India and you arrived in Toronto and there was no struggle in it.
Right.
It's always good to hear how God redeems and uses those seasons and how he's continued to be faithful in his call on your life. But there's some hard places in missionary life.
Yeah. And just a good heads up to our listeners that if they're praying for missionaries, especially missionaries in transition, to remember because it can take its toll on the family as you relocate and relocate and relocate. And God uses those times, but those can be so hard as a family. Well, so you show up in Canada, you're in a foreign country. What kind of visa how did you get into Canada? I mean, Canada sometimes is gracious and sometimes they're a little stingy with visas and stuff. So
I think we had our organization extend us a letter of employment.
Okay.
And we jumped through those hoops, and I didn't think they were actually going to let us in. It's interesting that you say that. We showed up up to the border, and we were it was the most difficult border crossing. It was 4 hours.
Wow.
They kept us and interrogated us, and I think our customs agent was an atheist, and when they found out we were here for ministry, her whole tune changed. That's another story. But it was 4 hours.
Yeah. Our organization has an office in Canada. They have a Canadian branch and a U.S. branch, so they could offer an employment letter.
Okay.
They told us right off the bat that they would not be renewing that. The government did, that they would not renew it after the 4 years was up. We needed to apply for permanent residency or plan to leave. So we went the permanent residency route, and we're granted permanent residency during the pandemic.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So then you show up in Toronto, you're navigating, you're having to find a place to live, start in a new school system with your kids. Learning where to shop, meeting your neighbors. Let's talk a little bit about that time.
The school. We identified an area in the GTA, and this particular area is known as India Central. And so literally some of the locals, they refer to it as Bramladesh or Brown Town or Singh Town. You know, there are all these different names. And so what was interesting was when we were trying to find a place to live, the realtor guy that helped us find a place to rent, his name was Tony. He was a white Italian guy. And we were looking at, I think it was about our 12th place that we had looked at. And we were looking at the townhouse that we're in right now. And Tony, he's in mid-sentence explaining all the amenities, and he stops and he literally has this awkward pause for like 5 seconds, right? And he looks at us and he just shakes his head. And he's like, I don't get it. Like, all of the white people are moving out, and yet like you're wanting to move in. And so apparently like the whole race thing here is pretty big. So on that note, like the school that we initially sent our kids to was like two blocks down. I can almost see it. And the 1,100 kids in the whole school, and the vice principal, who became a friend, said that in the whole school of like 1,100 kids, there were 10 white faces, and at three of them belonged to us at the time. Wow. And so it, like, for all intents and purposes, it was like India with poutine and cold temperatures. Like it's.
But that really helped in our daughter's transition, because yeah. she had a really hard time that we weren't going back to the only home she knew, you know.
Yeah.
And so coming here, and all of her classmates were from India and Pakistan, and she just jumped right in, like, and flourished, did really well, made friends, traded her food for samosas at lunch, you know, like she really enjoyed it and did well.
She caught flack from a Hindu friend for eating a hot dog at lunch because, hey, we don't need meat. We shouldn't eat meat, right? Like it's, yeah. it's, and well, what was really funny, she joined a rock band in the school, and so imagine, like, you know, a young white girl lead singing Yellow by Coldplay, and like literally the whole, like, 1,000 people were at this thing, and like they're all brown and they're all from Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, and they loved it, right? Like, it was this yeah. like surreal experience. But yeah, things like that would happen a lot.
We loved it. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Okay. Yeah. So you go and meet other parents, and yeah, you're the white faces in a non-white community. And how did people receive you?
They received us very well. We made lots of friends in the neighborhood. I think our kids were a big open door. Like, okay. eating, our youngest was a baby, and she would just jump into the arms of the ladies at the bus stop, and they would giggle and want us to come see them more. So it was, the kids really open a lot of doors, and that they soften up.
Yeah.
So I'll tell a funny story to kind of, and if you, so we, I love Jewish delis, right? And so my favorite Jewish deli was Kaplansky's down in Toronto. I said to Valerie one day, I said, Valerie, let's go downtown. Let's go get a Reuben. I really want a Reuben. Yeah. So we go downtown, all four kids in tow, standing room only, waiting for a table. And this white Canadian lady, like, she's looking at me and looking at the kids, and serious face. She looks at me, perfect stranger. And she's like, you know, there's a cure for that. Right? Like, basically telling me I need to get fixed because we have right. too many yeah. kids.
You have too many
kids. But now, like, when you're in our neighborhood, like, all of the South Asians love that you have a big family, especially the Muslim folk, right? Like, the fact that you have a big family, like, raises your status in a sense. It's like,
yeah.
oh, this is, you're a family man, right? Oh, you love kids. And so you have this, like, clash of values that you can really see here. But it's as easy, like, you go the, like, we're very intentional of meeting people. So at the school, there was that, like, we would go to local parks. I would specifically look for men with kurtas and, you know, different South Asian garb on, go sit down at the bench, start talking to them. And more often than not, most people spoke Hindi. So we try to use some Hindi to kind of develop a connection. A lot of Punjabi is spoken because there are a lot of Sikhs here. So I don't know much Punjabi, but, it's so easy to meet people, right? And you know, South Asians are famous for hospitality and wanting to build friendships. And it's so easy, right? Like, you show interest in them. And the sad thing is, a lot of them have a difficult time. Like, a lot of, you know, Canadian culture, it's very American in the sense of it's very individualistic. It's very private. It's very, it's hard to break into community. And if someone from India especially hasn't been trained or taught that, like, the people can appear to be very cold and not welcoming. And so you've got kind of a double whammy of, you know, immigrants who are community loving people who they just assume that the culture is going to be the same because they're not trained with enculturation, right, coming okay. here. And so when you have a family who not only speaks Hindi but, like, loves samosas and chai and butter chicken, like, show up, it's like, hey, like, we're friends for life.
Yeah. And you understand where they're coming from because you've lived where they've lived, and I'm sure that's a huge open door as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, there's a little grandma that walks around, and she'll always say hi, and she has her little walker, and for years she'll always walk around and say hi, and if she sees me up by the park, she'll pull me over to sit down and talk to her, and she says not many people will sit and talk to me, like, and she'll just talk. And But she was telling the other grandmas that are walking around in the evening time. And so it was last summer, we were sitting out front with the kids and this lady comes up and she starts speaking to us in Punjabi. And I replied to her in Hindi. I don't speak Punjabi, but I speak some Hindi a little bit. And she goes, "Oh, I've heard about you." So kindness and connecting go a long way.
I mean, we've been invited to pujas where like they're dedicating their new house to like a god or goddess, and they have the priest come in and, you know, does the fire in their home. Mm-hmm. We've been invited to iftar dinners during Ramadan by Muslim neighbors. We've been invited to mosques and like different Hindu temples. And so it really, like, from our perspective, like, one of my mentors, he would always say ministry is 90% showing up. And in general, he's right. Cross-cultural ministry does have a different element to it, right? That you do need training and knowledge on what culture is and how to move in it and how to learn it, which is why we're so thankful for Worldview, by the, you know, just a plug for what you guys did. But, you just show up. You know, you talk about missional, right? Like it's a mindset. If the Bible is true, and if the God of the Bible is the only God in the universe, then it has implications for how we live and how we spend our time and our resources and how we make our decisions. And it's like, we decided for our family, like, we believe and we know that it's true, and therefore we base our collective lives as a family around this truth. And we want our kids to see that our choices reflect the priorities that we have, and our choices, they, like, we're putting our money where our mouth is, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's huge. And I think many people think that it means living far, far away from home, and you are far away from home, but in many ways you're also choosing to live the gospel wherever you are, whether it's India, whether it's Canada, wherever God opens the doors. And I think all of us can make that choice.
When I would get discouraged in India, like, we'd have some really bad days. And so a lot of times what I would do, I would hop on my motorcycle and like, I would go to different locations. So I would go to one of the places in the city where they would make idols, fashion idols out of clay or wood or different kinds of metal. And I would remind myself, hey, like, these people, like, okay, believing what I believe and saying, you know, knowing what I know, that I would pose this question, go through these mental gymnastics. Okay, believing what I believe, knowing what I know, what wouldn't I want someone to do to come and reach me if I was lost? Yeah. Right. And so it's like, okay, you know, if you're an unreached person who's a Hindu or Muslim or a Jain or a Sikh that lives in India or lives in Canada or lives in Houston, Texas, or lives in the Maldives, you know, it's like, everyone has a right to hear the truth and to be loved by a community of Christians and to experience that. And so it's like, yeah, that's what we want to be about.
Yeah. When you relocated to Toronto, was there a local church you plugged into? Did you go there with a goal to plant a church, or what about your local church experience?
So we, our first 6 months to a year, we were pretty beat up, and our supervisor said, hey, you need to put your family back together. You need to get healthy. So we had kind of a sabbatical, like our first 6 to 12 months here.
Yeah.
And so we kind of did a return to normalcy, more or less, while just kind of basically surviving. But we also found an Indian church that we could be a part of. Mm-hmm. So we joined an Indian church for, I think it was two years or so. And
it was what my heart needed. Minister, the Lord used that to minister to my heart so much in that difficult time and transition. And it was really a blessing.
So we initially we were kind of like, you know, we kind of need to be ministered to, and, you know, we just need to kind of slow down a little bit and figure some things out. Obviously the goal is, you know, making disciples and seeing people come to faith and like see the church grow. Like, that's always a goal, right? And so we we worked at trying to help the Indian church be more missional, and that had its own challenges. We stepped out after about 2 years to help some other friends plant a church in our city. And we did that for about a year, I think.
About a year. We were on a core team kind of getting started. Okay. And then our oldest was getting to youth group age, and there was no kids a part of that. And so we prayed about it and talked with them, and we ended up stepping into another church home that had a youth group that our kids could be stepping into as well, and just kind of stage of life. And the opportunity was here to have that be a part of their life. So we stepped into it.
We feel like we kind of live in two parallel universes. And so there's that universe, but then the other universe is like, in many ways, it's like frontline, unreached frontier ministry here in a country where you have like legacy Christianity. So you have traditional churches that exist, and a lot of them are some of them are good. They're really healthy. Others aren't so much. But then in the mix of that, you have unreached peoples from unreached people groups like cohabitating in the same area. And the reality is, from our experience, like most Hindu and Muslim people, as an example, will never step foot into the context of a traditional church.
Right.
So the other universe we live in is like hospitality and engaging with people in homes, inviting them to our home, going to their homes, and ministry in that sense. And so it's like, as we build relationships with people, we're at different stages of different relationships and different junctures. And the hope would be that if God would bring someone to faith through our life and influence, then, you know, we would find a solution in terms of helping them find community. We haven't got to that point necessarily with anyone yet, but so a lot of it's been proclamation, evangelism, sowing seeds. We also welcome short-term teams from America, where we baptize them into the world of Islam, Hinduism, Sikhism, and Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And we try to help them understand, hey, why does missions exist? What is missions? And we look for churches that we can come alongside and help do culture training and equip them for, you know, how do you meet neighbors? How do you build relationships across cultural divides and that kind of thing? And so we have our hands on lots of different things. And we have the whole time since we've been here. But I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, but so you have a role in the Canadian church of helping them understand who lives next door.
Yeah, absolutely. So as an example, like we did a class on Hinduism at our current church, and then we took them to a Hindu temple, and we, you know, things like that. And then several of those people actually started engaging their Hindu neighbor. Like they never had a spiritual conversation with their Hindu friends. And after working with us, like, okay, we got to do this, right? And so even I think it was like last 2 weeks ago, we were at one of our church's small groups. It's the Asian small group. And one of the ladies is a Chinese Malaysian. And she was so excited. Like she had talked with a Hindu lady that I think was at work or somewhere. Mm-hmm. And she had to let us know that she had done that, right? And mm-hmm. And so like you have little bits of influence in different times and different lives like that, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing the kind of work you're doing, whether it were in India or in Canada, you have to do a lot of planting seeds. It's a long, slow process. It's not, I mean, because their culture and their religion are so intertwined it's a long, long road. Faithfulness.
It creates a lot of tension. So we know probably, I'm going to guess 15 missionaries here in the city, 15 missionary units with different organizations. And one of the things that we hear all the time, and we've in a sense experienced this, where, you know, usually the mission, we're all kind of doing the same thing with different groups of people, but we hear, we've experienced where local Christians, or especially Christian leaders like pastors, who don't really understand that cross-cultural work is different and it requires a different skill set and it requires an understanding of a different timetable. Yeah. Right, where like a lot of it's relational, And so, like, if you, because a lot of us really don't quote unquote have anything to show in terms of people coming to faith, it's like somehow you're subpar, or you're, what do you do with your time, or like, you know, allegations of like laziness or whatever. And that can be hard to fight through. It has been for me. And it's like, you know, at least in India, we had a business, right? And we could show you things and, you know, what we were doing. But diaspora ministry in North America, it's hard.
Yeah. But it's so necessary. The world is really coming to our doorstep. So we need to have an answer as a church for that.
And, do you ever have family conversations? Do your kids ever say, now remind me again while we're doing this? Or are they just like all in? Or do they ever start wondering like, hey, this isn't what everyone's doing? Or do those questions come up?
I think they recognize and understand what we do. And we've talked with them a lot. And it's really neat to hear, even when our oldest was, I remember she was having conversations with some kids down the street and telling them about the Bible. And, you know, it just overflows out in them quite often to their friends as well. And makes my heart happy to see that. And I hope as they get older, they continue to understand and recognize more and more kind of why, you know, they know what we do and how important it is. And I pray that they continue that through their life as well.
It like it's almost, you've heard the old phrase, caught, it's something, some things are more caught than taught. And, and I think like, we really try to be organic and incarnational, and like it's just who we are, right? Like it's not like a program. It's like they see dad going to a mosque meeting with an imam, or see dad debating with a Muslim in his house, right? Like about, oh, your Bible's corrupted. Oh, is it really, right? And you go back and forth. Or, you know, they see mom talking with, you know, the Hindu ladies in the garage, or, and so it's almost like, yeah, we want to teach our kids, but I think like the fact that they see it and they hear it, I mean, we're hoping and praying that that does its own work in a sense, not that we're not intentional with them in other ways, but like, like it's,
but we see them putting into practice kind of what they're hearing and seeing.
And
it's fun to go to the park and see who they connect with, you know, like they might be 10 kids there. And then we see our son run over to the Hindu boy and start talking to him. And they all of a sudden are buddies. And, you know, that makes my heart feel good that he can connect with whoever he sees and he knows why we're here.
I think that's so true. The MKs so often can make those connections, and they watch their parents and they live that life. And, you know, many times they can really see their place in the story, and sometimes they can't, and it's a struggle, but it can be a beautiful thing. I remember that as a kid for myself. I just, being MK, being our family did mission and we were all in it together. It was just life.
Yeah. And this, I don't mean this in a braggadocious or like an arrogant way, but what's interesting is like, I've had people, other parents in the youth group say things about our oldest, and like, wow, like she's so like developed and she knows her faith, and like she's well spoken on this and that and the other. And like what we usually tell them if we have that conversation is, it's like, it's, well, like, isn't that the way it should be for every kid, right? Like, and like really seeing, you know, there's, you know, I feel sorry for Christian parents that are just kind of like, it's on cruise control by default, right? Like this, so we, you know, church is an event, right? Like it's, we go here, we do this, you know, but there's no real like engagement, right? And, you know, there aren't many stories either, right? And so it's like, we want to show our kids, like the best stories come from those who actually like believe God and step out in faith and do something, right?
It takes intentionality. And I think that's what I hear in your story is there's God called us and we were intentional in obeying the call and going, or intentional in continuing to obey the call. and intentional and with our kids. And that, I think that's missional living, really being intentional in all that you're doing instead of just going on the default mode, like you said.
And allowing our kids to be a part of it too, you know, like allowing our kids to be there as we're having these conversations with people and seeing us open our Bibles and making sure they understand what's going on too along the way.
When we were at Worldview, we did a case study on Gladys Aylward, and her life like comes back to me at different times. And they, just like her, like there have been times where I've said, God, like I might not be the sharpest instrument in the shed. And, you know, I guess it's your business. Like you get to pick who you want to do whatever. And like, we're all equal, right? But we all have different functions and different gifts, and that's fine. That's up to you. But it, you know, this idea of, like it, if you just like show up and let God use you, like he does take care of the rest, right? And
Well, we're very grateful for our conversation and the time together. As we kind of wrap things up, is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners about as a family? And just, I mean, you've talked a lot about the choices you've made, but just kind of any other thoughts as we kind of wrap things up here?
Yeah, I would say that you don't have to wait for a perfect timing to jump in and get to know your neighbors. And to, you know, I've heard people use the conversation piece of, oh, when my kids get a little older, or, oh, when we have more time, or, oh, when, you know, if you live intentionally where you're at and you make the time and involve your kids and your whole family, the Lord will take it and run with it. That it's okay as you're getting to know your neighbor to be like, oh yeah, you know, I've got to run my kid to soccer. I'll be right back, you know, and then come back and finish that conversation. You don't have to quit everything in life. Just continue moving forward and get to know people around you.
Yeah.
I think for me, one thing I think about often, I like to use the metaphor of intersections for bringing clarity and understanding. And so for me, one of the most painful intersections in life is the intersection between profession of faith and like actual, like, what am I going to do about it? Right. And from my perspective, if you can get to a point where, you just finally decide, you know what, do I really believe the things that I say I believe? And you make that decision, yes, and you don't look back, like knowing that it'll be a difficult journey ahead. And there will be temptation to doubt that initial decision. But if you get on that road, like it's a lot of fun, right? Like it's like the people we've met, the experiences that God has given to us, like you know what living on a missionary budget is all about, right? Mm. And like, we don't have a lot of money. We don't have a lot of things. We don't have a lot by this world's standards. But what we do have, we wouldn't trade for anything, right? Like our faith, our knowledge, our experience, our pictures, like our, like it's, yeah.
Yeah. And God is gracious. You've mentioned a couple of times, especially Valerie, where you've talked about where God just kind of put a smile on your face because of the things you've seen your kids do, or conversations you can think back on, or encounters. And I think those are just little affirmations and reminders that God graciously gives us to say, hey, this is my heart. You're engaging in my heart. And so I think those affirmations and encouragements are important. And I think God's gracious to give us those things along the way.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're really grateful. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks. You too.
Talk to me a little bit about the interview.
Yeah, I just really appreciated Clint and Valerie's willingness to share their story and the story that God is at work in them and through them, and that there's been some hard times and some amazing just connections and ministry both in India and Canada, and just that God has been faithful to use them in both places. But
yeah, and I think that their transition story is important for people to hear. And it was hard, and there was, unexpected, and that's an important story to tell.
Yeah, and it's a common story, mm-hmm. and it's a story that a lot of people can relate to. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have walked a similar road.
Yeah, and then the choices that they made to locate a similar ethnic group, the ethnic group that they were working with, but finding them in a different location. And I'm just excited to hear all the stories from where they are right now.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder how many people are being just shaken up all over the world with those kind of visa issues of, you've learned a language and a culture, but that people and culture has moved. Yeah. So you may be able to move with them.
Yeah. Yeah, God is moving people all the time. And sometimes, like you mentioned in the interview, God is moving people to our back door or to our front door. Anyway, just yes. moving them to our
neighborhood.
To our neighborhood, and to not be afraid to reach out and engage and befriend.
Whether or not we're in cross-cultural ministry, I think is an encouragement to all of us to mm-hmm. look around and see who our neighbors are and how can we be very intentional with our faith.
Yeah, and just simply being a friend. So many people just desperately need someone to be their friend and to help them sometimes help them navigate a system that's very unfamiliar to them. So those are just some easy and some good takeaways.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time on the Innkeepers Podcast. Thank you for joining us for the Innkeepers Podcast. Our mission at Sanctuary Inn is to equip, refresh, and restore God's global workers. We hope today's podcast was an encouragement to you, or maybe the podcast you heard today, you've been prompted to pass this along to someone you know that could benefit from today's conversation. Creating a podcast is a team effort. Cara and I prepare and do the interviews, and we're grateful for the time that our guests give us out of their busy lives to help us learn more about missionary care.
We want to thank Tim Downing for the music he wrote and performed for the Innkeepers Podcast. Tim is a very talented musician, and you can find out more about Tim at downingkeys.com. Our podcast is edited by Javier Bolanos, and our website and show notes are prepared by Micah Githens, my amazing husband. You can visit the Sanctuary Inn website to see more of Micah's great work at sanctuaryinn.org.
Thank you for joining us on our journey to learn more about missionary care.